Like the office they commemorate, presidential libraries are living institutions. Certainly, it is my hope that the Reagan Library will become a dynamic intellectual forum where scholars interpret the past and policymakers debate the future.
Welcome to a Reagan Forum, hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. The Center for Public Affairs offers lectures and forums presenting perspectives on important public policy issues of the day, from politicians, authors, members of the media, business and military leaders, and more. We are going to spend the month of May by bringing you some of our favorite Reagan retrospective podcasts. These podcasts are stories shared by people who knew President and Mrs. Reagan best, people who worked with them, were friends with them, and knew them throughout their life. Each podcast brings you new behind-the-scenes stories from the Reagan years. They're funny, poignant, and rich in history. We hope you enjoy. For the first Thursday in May, we're going back to 2016, our first season of Reagan retrospective podcasts. Let's start with our podcast with Peggy Noonan, President Reagan's special assistant and speechwriter. Peggy Noonan wrote many of President Reagan's speeches, including his famous These Are the Boys, a Point to Hoke speech he delivered in Normandy on the 40th anniversary of D-Day, as well as the speech he delivered to the nation following the explosion of the Space Shuttle Challenger, in which he said that the astronauts had slipped the surly bonds of Earth to touch the face of God. During this podcast, Peggy shares an entertaining tale from President Reagan's visit to Normandy. Let's listen.
In 1984, shortly after the president had had his triumphant experience at the 40th anniversary of D-Day, when he had spoken at the American Cemetery in Normandy and also at Pointe du Hoc, as Americans pronounce it, shortly after he came back from the trip, I met with him in the Oval Office. So I said, "Mr. President, how did it go?" And he didn't talk about the reaction of the crowd, and he didn't talk about what a successful day it had been. He didn't talk about any of the media coverage. He didn't talk about any of that. The first thing he said was, "I couldn't believe what I saw. Some of the Rangers went up the cliffs." And he said, "Did you know what happened?" I said, "No." And he said, "Some of those U.S. Rangers who had taken the cliffs at Pointe du Hoc 40 years before decided they would try it again before the 40th anniversary." And so before Reagan spoke, they got together, and a few of them climbed to the top. One or two of them got to the top. At their advanced age, they wanted to see if they could do it again, and damned if they didn't do it again. And the next day, they were in the audience when the president looked at him, at them and said, "These are the boys of Pointe du Hoc." To me, that was very Reagan. He wasn't interested in any of the outer stuff or any of the self-aggrandizing stuff or how it played. He was interested in who those men were and how they still had the spirit and some of them the strength that they had had when they were boys. And you know, all presidents set the mood and the tone in their White House. And it might be an anxious White House, it might be a particularly optimistic or affectionate one. In Ronald Reagan's White House, we all admired and loved him. That's why we were there. But at the same time, there was no enforced sense that you had to have an awe of him. There was a surprising absence of formality in the Reagan White House. Sometimes in modern White Houses, they get too carried away in their seeing their president as an unquestioningly brilliant, godlike character, you know? We didn't have to do that in Reagan's White House. We made jokes about him. We had fun with him. We had fun about him. One of the ways you knew the president was coming, by the way, if you were walking through the White House, you assume the president's in the Oval Office, but sometimes he'd leave there with his detail, go someplace else. I found one of the ways you knew he was coming was you'd be walking along and suddenly you'd hear a burst of laughter. And that laughter told you, the president's coming. I always thought it not insignificant that merry laughter was the sound you heard before Ronald Reagan walked in a room.
Next, we'll listen to Mark Weinberg, another speechwriter and advisor to President Reagan. He served on the 1980 Reagan campaign traveling staff, all 8 years in the Reagan White House, and 2 years thereafter as President Reagan's spokesman in his post-presidency office in Los Angeles. In this podcast, he shares a heartwarming story about a Bic pen.
My association with the Reagans began in 1980. I joined the campaign just after the convention, after he was nominated in Detroit. And I was assigned to the Reagan tour, and I had a seat on the campaign airplane. I was a press assistant, and my job was to hand out press releases and run up and down the aisles, and if reporters had a question, convey them to the press secretary. And when we got to an event, hand out copies of the speech and things of that nature. After the victory, I went back to Washington, where I served for 8 years as assistant press secretary and special assistant to the president. Usually we were at Camp David on the weekends from where the president delivered his live weekly radio address. And I said, Mr. President, before you go, I have some letters that I need you to sign. And he said, well, okay. And we walk into his office. He had an office in the family quarters adjacent to his bedroom. Sits down at the desk, I hand him a pen, he signs the letters, I put them back in the folder. I said, thank you, sir, have a good weekend. He said, you too. A wink and smile, off I go. Monday morning, I come to the White House, as usual, to my desk, and a little bit after 9 o'clock, the phone rings, and it's Jim Kuhn, the personal aide. It said, he wants to see you. I said, yeah, right, I'm sure he does. He said, no, I'm serious, he wants to see you. And I thought, you know, this really doesn't happen. The president doesn't come in and say, I want to see Mark Weinberg. That's really not how it was. And we saw each other every day, but he wasn't one to summon me that way. I said, right. So I didn't go. I thought he was, you know, just scamming. About 2.5 hours later, closer to lunchtime, the phone rings again, and it's Jim, and this time he says, listen, I'm serious, he said he wants to see you. I said, what about? He said, I don't know. He said he wants to see you. I said, all right, fine. So about 20 minutes later, around noon, I go up to the Oval Office, down the hall from where my office was in the press room, and Jim's gone. So I say to Kathy Osborne, the president's secretary, Jim said he wanted to see me. She said, he does? She didn't seem to know. I said, yeah. She said, I don't know, let me ask him. So she goes into the Oval Office and she comes back and was a little startled and said, he does want to see you, go on in. She opens the door, I go in, there's President Reagan sitting alone at his desk, and I said, Mr. President, and he looked up and said, oh, hi, Mark. I said, I understand you wanted to see me. Yes, yes, I did. And I thought, well, I wonder why. Well, here I am. He said, listen, about those letters on Saturday, and I thought, oh gosh, I screwed something up. I said, yes. He opens the drawer of his desk and pulls out a pen and said, I'm sorry, but I ended up keeping your pen. And I didn't know if it was a special pen or something that had some meaning to you and so forth, and I felt bad about it. I was gonna call you, but I didn't want you to have to come all the way back to work, but here it is. He reaches across the desk and hands me the pen. I took the pen and put it in my pocket. I said, thank you, Mr. President, have a nice day. You bet. He went back to reading, I walked out, and I took the pen out of my pocket and I looked at it. It was a 49-cent flare felt tip that I had bought at a drugstore earlier in the week and just happened to have with me. But that was Ronald Reagan. He never lost sight of the small things. It never occurred to him that the pen was unimportant or that you didn't need it. He kept it, he brought it in with him to the Oval Office that morning and intended to give it back because it might have been something special to somebody else. And I never forgot it. The only regret I have is I didn't keep the pen.
Now let's listen to editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine, Steve Forbes, who, in 1985, was named by President Reagan as the chairman of the Bipartisan Board for International Broadcasting. In this position, he oversaw the operation of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. Broadcasting behind the Iron Curtain, Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty were praised by Poland's Lech Walesa as being critical to the struggle against communism. In this Reagan retrospective podcast, Mr. Forbes provides insight on the best advice Ronald Reagan ever shared with him.
I'm Steve Forbes, and I served in the Reagan administration from 1985 to 1989 as chairman of the Board for International Broadcasting, which oversaw Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. I felt especially privileged in that since Ronald Reagan started his career as a radio broadcaster. He understood the importance of communications, understood the importance of the battle of ideas, and while he was known for a great military buildup, he also understood how vital it was to engage in the war of ideas on a day-to-day basis. But it was not just big issues that Ronald Reagan was involved with. A few times he came to our office when I was with the Board for International Broadcasting, and we had a dinner where he was going to make the after-dinner speech. And we had the dessert on the table, and he started with the dessert. And I asked him why, and he said, well, if you're the after-dinner speaker or after-luncheon speaker, and the dessert is on the table, eat it first, because they always call on you to speak when people are about to eat dessert, and they never save it for you. So eat it first. And I've taken that to heart, and it shows. I also enjoyed, after he left the presidency, a couple of times he used our aircraft to go to Europe, and it was fascinating to see him work on his memoirs and see a man at work. He couldn't sleep on a plane, so he was at the table, scratching away, editing away, hour after hour, and I just couldn't stop staring at a man not only who made history, but was writing history. Whether big issues or small issues, Ronald Reagan was a unique individual, and as time passes, his reputation grows, and I think we yearn more and more of what we had and what we'd love to have again.
More Reagan retrospective podcasts after this message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to our Reagan retrospective podcasts. The White House Military Office is a subunit of the Executive Office of the President and provides military support for White House functions. Military representation aiding presidents predates the construction of the White House and originated with General George Washington's aide-de-camp, whose role as personal aide to the president is now filled by military aides. These roles carry a wide variety of responsibility, from critical military command and control missions to ceremonial duties at presidential events. The military aides are also the people responsible for carrying the football wherever the president is. That is, the briefcase carrying the nuclear codes. During President Reagan's time in office, one of his military aides was Steve Chelander. In this episode of our Reagan Retrospective podcast, Steve reflects on a touching moment shared between President Reagan and his military aides. Let's listen.
I'm Steve Chelander, and I was honored to be selected to be one of the military aides to President Ronald Reagan. We were the people that were charged with carrying the football and being the emergency actions officer for the president, and sometimes acting as personal aide to the president when necessary, and also as the ceremonial aide that you see marching behind the president when he troops the line of a foreign country. It was a great honor for me to have that position as military aide, but even more so to have been able to serve Ronald Reagan. And so one of the favorite stories that I have of President Reagan, and which illustrates his character and the type of person he was in 1987, he had cancer removed from his nose, and he had a bandage on his nose. And one of the stories that I like to tell about Ronald Reagan, which emphasizes his character a little bit, is one time in 1986, President Reagan had some surgery done on his nose to have a skin cancer removed. And so I was always trying to do things that would put a smile on his face. And so one day we realized that we, the military aides, as we were over in our office, and we were all five there. So I mentioned to the other aides, the president had this bandage on his nose, and I wanted to go over and try to make him feel a little better about having that bandage on his nose. And all the other aides thought this was a great idea. So we put our uniforms on, and all five of us went over to the Oval Office make the president feel better about the bandage he had on his nose. And so we all five put a piece of adhesive tape across our nose and walked up to the door of the Oval Office. And he looked at us and saw these bandages on our nose, and he said, "Well, you need to come in here now, because we got to get a picture of this." And so we all lined up in front of the George Washington portrait on the wall in the Oval Office and took a picture with the president with these bandages on our nose. And he was elated. by the fact that he got to do that and show his bandage off with our five bandages. Ronald Reagan was one of the warmest, best human beings, I can put it, that I have ever met and ever been around. And I often say that many of my life, standards, policies, convictions, everything have changed just because I had the opportunity to work around this magnificent man.
Kathy Bush served during the Reagan administration in the offices of communications and public liaison. When President Reagan left office in January of 1989, she became his press secretary and director of public affairs to both he and Mrs. Reagan in Los Angeles until 1995. In this Reagan retrospective podcast, Kathy reflects on the bond she formed with President Reagan, calling him the greatest human being she's ever met, and shares how the president was responsible for introducing her to her husband.
I began working for President Reagan when I was in my early 20s. I worked at the White House for the last year of the administration, and then I traveled to Los Angeles and moved to Los Angeles with the Reagans. And it was a privilege of a lifetime for me to serve President Reagan and to work in his press office out here in Los Angeles. For a girl from Chicago, it was a dream come true. I lived at the beach, and I worked for the greatest human being. A lot of people have asked me over the years, what was he really like? He seemed like such a great guy. And I have to say, he was all that and so much more. He was the most inherently decent human being I ever knew. Anyway, I guess if you have to ask me what is one of my most profound memories about working for President Reagan, I suppose I have to thank him for introducing me to my husband. After I moved to Los Angeles, I found that I was working with a really nice young guy in the press office here, and we ended up becoming close friends and actually dating. And he ended up moving to Washington, D.C. to work for President Bush 41 in the press office. And we didn't see each other very often. I think we probably saw one another most frequently when our bosses crossed paths. But we ended up getting engaged in 1992, right at the height of the presidential campaign. And Presidents Reagan and Bush were both scheduled to meet one another in Orange County for a huge campaign rally. And we all arrived in Orange County. There must have been 40,000 people at this rally. And there was so much chaos and excitement about seeing the presidents. And 5 minutes before we went on stage, someone from the staff said, President Reagan needs to talk to you. You need to go into the holding room. And I thought, oh, okay. And we meandered over to the holding room very reluctantly. The door opens, and there are both presidents standing there, ready to congratulate us and greet us on the occasion of our engagement. And we have this darling picture of the four of us posed together that they both signed, and it is truly one of our most treasured possessions. It is very, very dear to both of us and commemorates that day and that occasion. President Reagan used to always say that he was kind of the Cupid. He loved the fact that he had played a small role in bringing us together. And while he couldn't attend our wedding, which was held in Chicago the following year, he did send a video, and his charm and wit were evident in that video, and we still have it and cherish it today.
Well, I'm really not sure what I'm supposed to say, because that gal that writes my speeches is off getting married. Speaking of which, I have a special greeting for the bride and groom. I thought I would begin with one of my favorite and most popular openings. As King Henry VIII told each of his wives, "I won't keep you long."
I am still associated and proud to be associated with the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation as a trustee. It is my privilege to serve the foundation and to do everything possible to preserve the legacy of President Reagan.
Our last Reagan retrospective podcast for today is with former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, first elected into office in 1979 as the congressman from Georgia's 6th District. Newt Gingrich quickly began working with President Reagan in the 80s to bring about real, positive change in America. In fact, in 1984, President Reagan thanked Congressman Gingrich for how much he leaned on him over the past 3 years, saying that the congressman represented the kind of courageous leadership of which Southerners and all Republicans are rightfully proud. In this podcast, Speaker Gingrich recalls a handful of humorous stories he remembers of his time with President Reagan. Let's listen.
As a very junior member in Congress, occasionally I got to ride in Air Force One. Every single time, as we would leave Andrews, the president would come back to see his guests, and he would say, you know, I tried to talk the pilot into diverting and bombing the Capitol, and they just wouldn't do it. And I used to think to myself, we're your allies. What are you talking about? And I think it captured the natural constitutional tension between presidents and Congresses. But he did it with humor, which was his style. I have a picture at home, one of my proudest possessions, of the president and I talking on Air Force One. And we're both laughing. One other funny story. And I'm going to tell you the precedent to it, which was Tom Foley. Foley told the story one time that he was a freshman. He flies into Spokane, Washington, to the airport, which was very small back then. This would be Lyndon Johnson as president. And he gets off the airplane, and the airport manager says to him, oh, Congressman Foley, Congressman Foley, President Johnson is on the line. They run into the office, which has a big glass door, and they close the door so that Foley can speak privately to the president. He's only a freshman, he's been in office about a year. Picks up the phone, the president gets on, and says, about that appropriations bill. And Foley says, you want Congressman Foley of New York, he's the chairman of appropriations. Lyndon Johnson literally says, what? Slams the phone down. Now, all these people are standing outside the door watching. So Foley talks for three more minutes to an empty phone, hangs up, goes out and says, national security, can't share it. Well, I thought of that experience because we'd gone through a cycle where Nancy had been attacked and I had defended her on the floor and attacked her critics and went home and I was at Bremen High School in Bremen, Georgia, a small town in West Georgia. And I'm talking to the student body and all of a sudden this person comes rushing out shaking and says, President Reagan is on the phone. And I'm thinking this is going to be a Tom Foley moment, you know. So I go to the principal's office, close the door, pick up the phone, and the White House operator says, the president wants to talk to you, hold on a second. And he gets on, and he just wanted to thank me for having defended Nancy. But it was very cool.
These six Reagan retrospective podcasts are only half of the 12 episodes in the season, so we recommend you visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Reagan Foundation to download the entire season, as well as all of our podcasts in our four current seasons. Or subscribe to our playlist so you don't miss any of our new episodes. Thank you for listening.
For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Until next week, thanks for listening. God bless you.
Don't forget to subscribe to A Reagan Forum podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of A Reagan Forum come out every Thursday. Like what you hear? Check out our Words to Live By podcast featuring radio addresses and speeches Ronald Reagan delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. New episodes drop every Tuesday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.